Hi everyone, Sam here, the host of Tapped into Bowhunting and Archery. The opinions expressed on this show may not necessarily represent Titanium Archery Products as a company. While I do have a great deal of experience as an archer, I don't consider myself an expert in any particular area other than the products I design and produce for TAP. Enjoy the show. Hello everyone, welcome listeners of Tapped into Bowhunting and Archery. I have been on a long hiatus, I know. And I apologize. Running TAP has consumed virtually every minute of every day, and I've neglected to put together podcast material. So I have some ideas in mind for this episode, maybe a bit of a rambling show, but I want to cover some topics and give you guys updates on where we're at as a company, what's happening with products, what might be in development, what you can expect to see down the line. And talk a bit about hunting. Here we are, it's May 16th, and I know for some people, hunting may still seem to be a long way off. Archery season, of course, is the focus, but it isn't that far. And it is time to be talking about shooting, what you're doing with your bow. I understand people have a lot of commitments. Many other activities pull people away from archery. And it's understandable. Family commitments, jobs. It's just nice. The weather's nice. So people are out and they're doing hiking and fishing, and there's a variety of other things. Yard work. Hate yard work. I try to put that off as long as I can, but that has to be done at some point. So it's understandable when people are not focused as much on their bows and on shooting. But that being said, TAP, here at TAP, we are focused all the time on archery. It's a necessity in order to keep this business functioning. It has to be essentially 24/7 archery. And that's okay with me. This is my passion. I love this. So for me, as a business owner and being an avid archer myself, it's okay that I have to turn my focus essentially entirely to archery and bow hunting. But for others out there, they may find that a bit more difficult to do. So what's happening with TAP? Well, there's a lot, in terms of just looking at how we can build our presence further. That's an ongoing, ever-present focus area, is continuing to beat that proverbial drum and make people aware that we're still here. We're not going anywhere, and in fact, we're expanding our footprint. So as you can see through our social media, that has grown. It continues to balloon out in its reach, and we are not planning to stop that anytime soon. That is what is effective for us. That's the method of reaching people. That's our method of advertising and promotion and marketing. So we'll continue to do that, and more video content should be coming out in the near future that highlights what our products are doing, specifically how they're doing it. There's testing that is underway on certain items that could show up in the future as far as additions to existing products, specifically the string stop. Is something that I'm working on, noise canceling and vibration mitigation materials that can be used to further enhance the performance of the string stop, which if you have one, it's a phenomenal product. It works extremely well. But I never stop looking for ways to innovate, never stop looking for opportunities to improve. And that's the mentality I want all of us to have, is that we always need to strive forward and be pushing for improvement, betterment in every aspect of our function, every aspect of what we do within the archery realm. And of course, that would be ideal if you do that in your personal life too. So Element X continues to be our standby, our flagship, but the hybrid stabilizer is really exploding out there in recognition and also starting to really pick up on additional sales. So I get questions a lot about the differences between these stabilizers. So I think it's a good opportunity to address that in more detail here. where I can break it down a bit further. This is similar in a lot of ways to a phone call that I would have with a customer that might be reaching out or a potential customer. And I feel like having that conversation with someone is the best way to provide the information in the most understandable fashion. This gives me that opportunity as well. So let's talk about stabilizers that we have and what the differences are. Why is one more expensive? And some of you may already know this, but I'm going to go over it for those that don't. So we have Element X, which goes from 6 up to 8, then to 10, then 12. That's where it stops. The hybrid starts at 8, goes up in increments of 2, all the way up to 32 inches. So if you look in our bow hunting stabilizer collection, you'll find that the hybrid goes up to 14 inches. And then if you go into our target stabilizer collection, you'll find it available at 8 all the way up to 32. We have it differentiated because of the colors and because of a couple other reasons that make it more simplistic for us to manage the product lines through the website, but also giving people a sense that it is a viable option for bow hunting and for target purposes. So why is the hybrid more expensive? A couple reasons on that. Production time is longer and material costs are considerably higher on the hybrid. And the reason for that being, well, the production, the material rather, cost being higher is the carbon fiber main body portion. We have ultra high modulus, and then now we've bumped up to a, I would say, about a mid-grade modulus for the standard hybrid. Also a very strong material, strong enough for anything up to even 14 ounces or so on long stabilizers. On shorter stabilizers, when I say shorter, I'm talking 12 inches and under, there's really no limitation on how much weight. And I think people don't realize at times how much weight certain shooters do actually use. So that's a consideration we had to take into account when designing this product. And then the Hybrid Pro is out there as well, which is specifically geared towards target archers, competition archers, and is designed with that ultra high modulus material. And that carbon is very expensive per inch, and that drives our production cost up. So you have these options that you're looking at, and people oftentimes are scratching their heads saying, beyond the price, beyond the appearance, what is it that sets the two apart from each other? In lengths of 12 and under, and I often say this, 12 and under, you're essentially getting very similar performance, about identical performance from the Element X and the Hybrid. At 12, you may notice a slight advantage on the Hybrid side, but in many cases, people won't. When you get beyond 12, though, it becomes more apparent in a couple areas. The Hybrid has a lower base weight as you extend out in length due to the lower density of carbon versus titanium. It also offers a greater degree of rigidity as you extend out in those longer lengths. So that's where the advantage becomes very apparent. And that's what you would have to consider if you're looking at choosing one of those two options. In almost all cases, the customers we're dealing with are looking to outfit their bow for bow hunting purposes. And being that that is my background, my specialty area, it allows me to give good insight to people that are inquiring. And I often refer to my own personal setup, sending pictures out of what I'm using. I currently do shoot the Element X's. I may switch over at some point here and play around with some of the hybrids on my hunting bow. But I like the Element X's for hunting purposes. I like the sleek look, the thin diameter, the entire length. A lot of people love the look of the hybrid. They feel that that is a very sophisticated look. And I like it as well. I just currently, that's what I'm using. I use two 10-inch Element X's on my Ridge 34 Athens Archery. So I have the 10-inch on the front with quick disconnect, puts me out at about 12 inches almost exactly, including those three weights. And then on the side stabilizer, when you factor in the length of the mount and you factor in the 6 ounces that I have on it, that's also exactly at 12 inches. Might seem cumbersome to some people to use that as a hunting setup, but it really isn't. it barely extends beyond the rear cam, my side stabilizer. I find that it's second nature to shoot with it and to carry it, and it's still a nimble bow. But if you're going from no side stabilizer to what I have, it might seem rather unusual and difficult at first. It doesn't take long, and I strongly recommend people look into it. Side stabilizers, that is. What they can offer, the improvement in accuracy is clear. It is very noticeable, and it's something that once you experience that improvement in accuracy, once you experience the additional control of the bow through the shot, the additional forgiveness that you get with that product in place, you won't want to go back. And that's what I often say, and it is absolutely true. So the differences are price, and they are more apparent, as I said, at the longer lengths, 12 inches and beyond. If you're just looking to do what is a fairly typical hunting setup, the most commonly purchased combo we have would be Element X, 10-inch front stabilizer, 8-inch side stabilizer. That is by far the most popular combination. And that is in part due to me recommending that for a lot of people. It's also in part due to people having used other brands of stabilizers and that being what they had on their bow in the past, the 10 and the 8. So I think that is a good choice for the majority of people looking to actually get measurable, definitive improvement in their longer range accuracy. Now, I often use that term, longer range accuracy. What does that mean? Well, to some people, 40 yards may be a long shot. They don't shoot beyond, say, 30. I recommend that if you're going to really evaluate a product, your bow, stabilizers, new arrows, new release, you're looking to push yourself and evaluate if you're improving, then you need to shoot beyond 40 yards. So make 40 your minimum and work your way out to 60, 70, 80, 90, even 100. I do that a lot through the summer, 80 to 100 yards, rarely shoot closer than that. And I feel that that provides an advantage when it does come time to make those close range shots on game. My philosophy is shoot long distance, be very proficient at long distance, and by proficient, maintain group sizes that are as tight as you're capable of, and if you think you can do better, push yourself to do better. I'm not going to throw a number out and say, well, this is what you should try to achieve. That can vary between different levels of skill and types of equipment and setups people have. But by doing that, you are bound to improve your overall ability to focus, shot execution, form, follow through. These longer shots require greater precision. So my philosophy is shoot at these long distances, become really good at those distances, and then kill. Let's just use that term. You're going to be killing at close range. For me, as close as possible. That's what I want. I want to be as close as possible to the game that I'm pursuing. It ensures a better opportunity for me to make a successful shot. And it also, to me, feels like an accomplishment to have gotten into that close proximity to the game that I'm going after. And white-tailed deer is really all I go, that I hunt for. And in the situations that I'm hunting, the deer are often very wary. And they are on alert to some degree because of the pressure of other hunters. So getting close, making the shot, being able to do that without being detected, that's an accomplishment in itself. And I'm very, been very successful with that approach. So that's what I hope others out there will do. They'll take that into consideration, what I've said, and really try to do maybe push and do something new with their shooting. And a lot of people do say they shoot at long distance. I interact with a lot of people on social media, of course. I do see a lot of posts about, well, I shoot, all the time at 70 or 80. And that's great. And I hope those people really are. And I hope also that they are, holding themselves to a high standard and trying to accomplish great accuracy at those long ranges. It is certainly possible. had someone call me yesterday. We had a good discussion about product, and he said that, you know, at 40 up to about 40, he feels very good. He's very accurate. And, but beyond that, things just open up wildly. And I felt like part of that was likely due to the lack of stabilization he had, and really didn't have stabilizers on his bow. He just had a front stabilizer, which sounded like was a rather inappropriately named accessory, because it didn't sound like it was long enough of a stabilizer to really provide the control and the stability you would need. And it didn't sound like it was a well-constructed product. And I don't point out product names. I don't point out other companies. We have no need to do that. I'm not here to bash anyone or anything, but I would say that, you know, given what he was using, our product is a major step up. And he did order a hybrid for his front stabilizer. He's later, I think, going to look into a side stabilizer, got the string stop. So that's a big jump ahead for him. And he will see those benefits as he works through his adjustments and works through, you know, pushing out to these longer distances. So when it comes to string stops, what we're looking at, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show here, is further reduction of vibration, of felt vibration in the hand, also further alteration and muting down frequencies, muting down, whenever possible, peak frequency. So if the peak volume spike occurs at, let's say, 400 hertz, well, that's an area we certainly want to focus on. And for those of you that don't know, when, you know, hertz, when I say something like that, I'm talking about the sound spectrum. I'm talking about what is essentially the range of human hearing generally is 20 hertz or so, 20 as in 20, up to, in some cases, as high as about 20,000 hertz. And 20,000 hertz is an extremely high frequency. And as you get older, you lose your ability to hear those higher frequencies as well, if at all. So that is the range of human hearing. And what we see in tests is that typically with the bow shot, somewhere around 400 hertz, it may be somewhat lower, it may be even around 200, but somewhere in that general range is where you'll see your peak spike in intensity. And that's an area we want to look at. How can we reduce that? Because that's what you're going to be perceiving as the noise, as the certainly the loudest component of that noise. But it, even if you don't reduce that peak specific band or frequency, you can reduce others within the sound stream. And that is an area we see consistently with stabilizers, with string stops, that titanium is reacting differently and producing different levels of intensity within different bands of noise, of sound. So you might see, for example, a reduction with our products in the 800 to say 1500 range, or maybe 2000 hertz, where you don't see as big of a reduction with a stock string stop or with another brand of stabilizer. How that comes into play on game is something that is I'm intensely fascinated with that. I am extremely interested in what that can mean in the field. That is quite difficult, if not impossible, to really obtain that information. We have no way to determine exactly. We don't have the level of resources or test equipment to be able to determine how it actually affects game. But we do know, let's just take an example from everyday life. You may remember, I don't think they're really marketed or sold too much anymore, but I do remember a device that you could put on the front of your car. It was these small pieces you could mount on the bumper or in that vicinity or on your hood to alert deer that you were driving. So in theory, it was to help you avoid collisions, produced a high-pitched noise, very high pitch. And that alerted them and it scared them. Well, if we can reduce higher pitched noises that are reaching into that mid to upper level range with our products, it's only logical really to consider that that would be potentially making the game less likely to be startled by your shot. What I think will be the ultimate tell on that is some additional tests that I have coming up. And what we're going to be doing here is about 10 yards downrange from the bow itself is where the test equipment is going to be situated. I've done some of it, but I haven't had all the prototype pieces in place that I needed. So about 10 yards downrange will be where the microphone is calibrated for flat response. What that means is this microphone is not going to value one level or one frequency over another. And many microphones, the microphone I'm speaking into right now, in fact, would do that because it is designed for vocal purposes, for recording a podcast or maybe singing into it. So it is going to value the ranges that our ear is more likely to be receptive to, and as humans, we are more attuned to. But a flat response microphone will not do that. It just looks at them all as equal. And that's what we want. So we'll be doing that at 10 yards. And then beyond the microphone itself, about 20 yards beyond the microphone, is where the target itself is. So then you get no chance of feedback from the impact, from the arrow impact, affecting your results. Definitely do not want contaminated results from arrow impact. So that'll be coming up here, and you know, may not happen till sometime in the early summer. Hopefully within the next few weeks, I'll have all the components I want in place to really do that extensive test. Because downrange noise is, in my view, all that matters when it comes to these products. People often comment and say, my bow sounds quieter now, shooting various accessories that they're putting in place, or you know, I made an adjustment on arrow weight and it's quieter. And that could very well be the case, that even downrange, yes, in fact, the bow is quieter. But it may not be entirely true because of the way sound gets altered by different accessories that are on bows. So your ear, what you're detecting may not be entirely accurate. Bystanders may say your bow is loud, quiet, etc. And they may be correct as well, based on what downrange tests would show, but they may also not be. So our ears are not what we need to be using as the gauge of how effective products are. And you know, it helps sell product. Certainly when someone puts a product on and they immediately react and say, my bow is so much quieter, that's a sure win, essentially, I guess you could say, from a marketing perspective. People are pleased that the product works. In their mind, it works. What our focus, though, is, you know, demonstrating, having concrete data, if possible, and showing that definitively, yes, this is what is occurring versus my perception or your perception of what is occurring. And then also, too, our focus is, with the stabilizers in particular, it is accuracy. It's improving your ability to put the arrow on target specifically where you want. It's group size reduction. It's controlling the bow through the shot. If you look at the high speed, slowed down, so it's a high frame rate video that we've done, and then slowed down, you see the bow control. You see the arrow leaving the arrow rest before the bow has a chance to really significantly move. That is what we're looking for. So stabilizers should be seen from that perspective. That's what they're for. They're to improve accuracy. If they also happen to alter the sound to some extent, good. But that's not really what the test data to this point has shown. Is that stabilizers may have a minimal effect on some bows, not on all bows, on noise, on actual decibel level. But they will certainly have the ability, and they will demonstrate the ability to you as the shooter to help you be more accurate, period. So oftentimes people will ask, well, where do I start when I want to work on reducing noise? And I'll say, don't make it a priority that you upgrade the stabilizer first, if that's the biggest thing for you. If that's the most important aspect of what you want to change on your bow, don't make the stabilizer be the focal point. Make the string stop and the noise emanating from that area be your focal point. And then if your bigger priority is accuracy, well, then of course you would be looking at stability first and in all likelihood also considering side stability. So you have to be realistic on what you're expecting. And I feel like people need to recognize that the products have limitations and you're never going to completely suppress all vibration. You're never going to completely suppress all bow noise. It doesn't matter what product is put on. We're looking for incremental gains. And that's what we see in some cases, that increment is big. In some cases, that increment is smaller and it may not be as readily detectable. That's just the nature of different types of designs of bows, levels of poundage, draw length, arrow weight, release type, arrow rest type, sight you're using, if there's a quiver attached, the list goes on. So be realistic, have an idea about what you want specifically out of your bow. Speaking of bows, so Athens is one of them, Matthews is one of them, Prime, you have Hoyt, you have Bowtech, you have Expedition, Obsession, there's so many companies, Bear. There's a lot of great bows out there, and we've chosen to align with Athens for a couple of reasons. I love the way they shoot. They are extremely quiet. They are true to IBO speed. They are priced in an affordable range. The people behind the company are awesome. Those are all good reasons to shoot that bow and to be a dealer for that company. But if you shoot another brand, that, and in all likelihood you do, because Athens does not currently have a large market share such as Bowtech or Hoyt or Matthews does, that's fine. And that's good. And if you're shooting well with what you have, we are happy. Our main focus, of course, is our own products. And our products work on any bow. Matthews, Bowtech, Hoyt, again, the list goes on. So that's our focus. And we're not going to come across to anyone, you know, there's no browbeating here. There's no, you know, there's no put down on anyone's choice in what bow they actually decide to use. And that's going to remain our approach and our focus area. And that's going to remain our stance on that. Okay, so covered a lot there, you know, a lot of talk about accessories and how to utilize them and what sets different things apart in our products and what might be coming up down the line. There also could be some very interesting things that happen, you know, in 2020. I have ideas about where we should be going with eventually hoping to get more integrated and involved with bow design itself, and how we could use some of the developments that are occurring in bow production itself. So there's possibilities there, and I will be exploring those as we go on. That's exciting to me, and all that may be, in a lot of ways, the ultimate goal for TAP, is to get to that point where we have a lot of direct influence over, say, for example, how a riser is designed, maybe certain materials being incorporated into that riser. Of course, money is always a factor. Retail price of a bow is already relatively high, even when they're quote affordable. So we have to think about how we would impact that. And of course, any company we're working with would have that at their top of their list, is how would we affect how would we affect their bottom line price. So I think I'll come back here around to some more topics, but I'm going to end this segment in a few minutes, like maybe say 40 seconds or so, because I'll be at my 30 minute point. And then I may record another segment and incorporate that into the same show. But if not, I hope I gave you some food for thought, and I hope that you will reach out if you have things you'd like us to do to address. If there's something you want to see us work on, we'll listen to you. We'll certainly take it into account. I like input and I like good critical feedback. So thank you guys for tuning in, and go to titaniumarcheryproducts.com. Take care, everybody, and stay tapped out. Hey, everyone. I'm back with segment two of this episode. I wanted also to get into talking about early season preparation, not early season hunting, but I consider this early season for getting prepared. In my view, there isn't really, I guess, an off season per se, but I do think for a lot of people there is. So at this point, for many people, getting bows out now might be even a little bit early. Of course, we're shooting our bows throughout the year. We're working on various products and then testing products. So a lot of the shooting does involve just taking into account the fact that we need to work on product. But even if it weren't for TAP, I did in the past shoot quite a bit throughout the year. There are some people who shoot a lot more than I do, though. And, you know, my hat's off to those people. And there are a lot of people, of course, that don't really shoot their bows much at all until it's almost time for the season. So I want to talk about that. And let's talk about, is that a bad idea? I could say it that way. I don't know that it's a bad idea, but I would not advocate for doing that. So if you are looking to be at the top of your game, to truly be prepared for making shots in situations that may be very difficult, that may be almost impossible to duplicate, really, in terms of the level of adrenaline and emotion you might have when it comes time to make a really critical shot, practice and preparation does go a long way in being very comfortable and in tune with your bow. They contribute mightily to you being able to execute the shot when you need to. So I believe you should have your bow out. I certainly believe you should be considering the upgrades as soon as possible. I saw a post someone made on Facebook about they work at a bow shop. I may have been on Instagram, but they work at a bow shop and how, you know, people are rushing in a few weeks before the season to get new string sets done and that they can't guarantee they'll be ready in time if you wait that long. By all means, do not wait that long. And when it comes to our products, I strongly urge you to get those products earlier rather than later, because you need time to adapt to what might be a fairly substantial change to what you're used to. Even if you are used to a particular type of stabilizer setup, but you might be switching to our brand, you still should give yourself plenty of time to become supremely confident with that new gear. So don't, you know, think, well, I'll wait till 3 weeks, 4 weeks out, buy some new stabilizers, buy a string stop or whatever it might be. If anything, I guess you could wait with a string stop because it's primarily really only affecting noise and the way the bow feels in your hand. But even then, that's a change. And a change to existing equipment can potentially throw you off if your shooting ability is good and your form is good and you're confident and you've always been able to execute shots well, then it may not have much impact to make adjustments. But even then, I just strongly believe that you should be so acclimated to the setup and that you're going to be just shooting in a way that it's not even registering to you that anything could be different about it because you're so familiar with it. And that's what you need to do. And that's what I think will really ultimately benefit you the most. So is it too early? No, it absolutely is not. And now would be a great time to consider making those changes, making those upgrades. I know a lot of people put time into their food plots. They put time into feet on the ground, getting out there, walking miles in the woods, checking trail cameras, looking for evidence of where the deer herd may be or if there's been changes. And that's all necessary as well. And I do that too. But don't neglect what I feel is the most important aspect of bow hunting. And that is the equipment and making the equipment be at its ultimate level of performance for you so that when it comes time to make a shot, you are 100% confident that not only will you make the shot correctly, that you will recover the animal. Everything is in line in your mind. So prioritize that too. and get that bow out there. You don't need to be shooting 200 arrows a day. You don't need to be shooting 50 arrows a day. In fact, I've found in my own shooting archery career, if you want to call it that, that there is a point where you can shoot too much. And for me anyway, there's a negative aspect, I think, to shooting too many arrows, not from muscle fatigue, but I don't know exactly what it's related to, but there is a point where I feel like I start to see a slight decline in performance if I'm shooting too much. So I might go out one day and shoot 20, 30 arrows more. I might shoot not at all the next day, or I might just shoot a couple the next day. I don't have a schedule on that. I'm not a tournament archer. I'm not preparing for a competition where I feel I have to have a regimented schedule on the amount of arrows that are being shot or in a particular sequence. Nothing along those lines. To me, it's about developing the psychological, just the level of having a settled mind, of getting to a point where everything feels right physically, and then in my mind, I am 100% feeling confident about the bow, about the broadheads, about the arrows, about just even the veins. Everything falls into place. And you'll know when that is. You'll get that feeling and you'll know. You'll have that gut reaction that, hey, this is ready. I'm ready. And you could say, well, that occurs for me after just a week of shooting. Get the bow out, dust it off, shoot for a week. That's where I'm at. I'm not going to argue with anybody. Maybe that is true for some people, but I don't believe that by far and away that is true for most people. So put the time in, find an appropriate schedule for you that allows you to shoot enough, but not create levels of fatigue or, you know, create a situation where you're becoming bored with it, but just, you know, be highly proficient. So we don't want any surprises. You certainly don't want any surprises. And another thing to consider here when it comes to gear, when you're shooting, is maintaining that gear. So I mentioned strings. Definitely want to be looking at that. I mean, some people put tremendous amounts of arrows downrange. They are putting in those reps. They are shooting throughout the year. Don't neglect to look at the condition of the cables and strings and make sure they're thoroughly, you know, waxed up if that's what needs to be done. Making sure that they're just in good shape. Even if it's not an issue of breakage, even if it's not a concern that they may fail, it just, to me, it's not inspiring confidence in my setup to look at the strings and see fraying or to see things out of place. So get it in tip-top shape, keep it in tip-top shape. Consider sights. Consider, you know, when it comes to, you know, if you've got it dialed in, but things are not entirely tight, that's a concern. You know, things can loosen over time. I've noticed over the years that there are certain set screws that I thought were really ratcheted down pretty tight, but it turns out they weren't. So go over things, check that out, make sure things are tight and make sure things are right the way they need to be. So it's not too early to do that. It doesn't mean you can't fish. It doesn't mean you have to put off boating or all the other recreational activities. It just means that you should give some attention to your shooting and your archery as well. And that's, you know, that's something that we would want to see in all of our customers. We know that a lot of people out there may be more on the casual side when it comes to how they view archery, how they view bow hunting. I guess you could say my mentality is certainly not a casual one in really very little, very little aspect of my life. Do I look at things casually? And certainly bow hunting and archery is one that I take with a high degree of seriousness. I feel that if you're going to go to the woods and your intent is to take a life of an animal, a beautiful creature, one of God's creations, you must be 100% prepared to do it correctly. And if a situation happens, if one of those situations comes up where poor shot gets made, or, you know, there's something that out of your control, branch hits an arrow and wounds an animal. Nobody's going to, I certainly won't. I don't beat anybody up over that. If they did their due diligence in preparing, but that occurred anyway, then, you know, that's not their fault. If everything that they could do was done. And that includes broadheads. And we've had this discussion on this podcast before, but, you know, you're going to have your personal opinion on what broadhead you use. Choose whatever works for you, just like with bows. But take into account that you need to choose something that really does have the ability to effectively and cleanly kill in all scenarios, all shot angles, all unforeseen circumstances. So, you know, that comes down to all those little nitty-gritty details. And, you know, if everything you've done in your mind has mitigated any potential failure of equipment, and you're proficient with the gear, and you're shooting at a high level, then if something happens, it happens. That's part of hunting. But I would like to think that the people we deal with, that the majority of bow hunters out there, will feel some of those pangs of hurt or ache over a lost animal. Because if you don't feel that, if it doesn't eat you up a little bit, I question your level of ethic. And that's just my opinion. You know, I question the level of ethic that a person has as a hunter if they don't feel really, you don't want to be dejected, but you certainly want to feel the hurt of losing that animal, because you don't want it to happen again. Doesn't mean it won't, but to feel that you let yourself down, I don't think is a bad thing in that case. To feel like you need to strive to be better, to do everything you can to not let it happen, is certainly not a bad thing. And I think the majority of bow hunters, certainly the people I deal with, are of that mentality. They do feel that way. They do have that conviction that it matters. And I've expressed these opinions on some other shows that I've been on as a guest. And I think I've talked about this here on our own show too. So I like to see that. And I like to think that our clientele, that our customers are in large part of that persuasion, that they do feel that way, that they do act that way, because that's a value, that's a level of value system, that's a level of inherent belief in someone that I think is important, that I think we all need to have. And, you know, it goes a long way as well with non-hunters if we carry ourselves that way. If we don't take the life of the animal lightly, we don't take our approach to harvesting that animal lightly, if we conduct ourselves in a responsible, mature, respectful way, we have the potential to convert non-hunters. We have the potential to, at the very least, influence them and show that hunters can carry themselves in a very positive manner and conduct themselves in a way that is, you know, something to be respected. And that's my hope. That's my personal view, of course, but that is my hope going forward as a company. We can continue to maintain that focus area when it comes to our hunting, when it comes to our bow hunting. And, you know, it's not the case with everyone out there. Not everyone has that level of conviction. So I am going to leave you guys with that. But as I said in the beginning of this segment, get your bows out, get shooting, start evaluating your equipment. Is it where you want it to be? If it's not, what do you need to do? Make a checklist. What are the items that I think can be improved on the bow? Does the bow itself need to be upgraded in your view? If it does, reach out to us. Athens is a phenomenal choice. It is. Athens will impress any shooter. I am 100% confident in that. If the bow itself needs to be upgraded, consider that. Like I said, look at strings and cables. If your stabilizers are not where you want them to be, you know how to find us. You know that's our specialty. Your bow is louder than you think it should be. Talk to me about string stops. Take a look at tree limb quivers if you're looking for a quiver upgrade. If you're looking at sights, we sell sword sights. I shoot sword sights. Phenomenal product. Can't go wrong. So there's a lot of areas to consider for upgrades. Whether they need to be made is ultimately your decision. But take a look now. Save yourself some trouble down the line. So until next time, I don't know when next time will be because of the nature of this business. But until next time, take care, everybody. Stay tapped out. And so concludes another episode of Tapped into Bow Hunting and Archery. I thank you for listening. I thank you for sharing. Be sure to go to our website, titaniumarcheryproducts.com. Take care, everybody, and stay tapped out.